This is the Advanced Union Government Committee meeting, April 26, 2001, in front of 350. This is the Advanced Union Government Committee meeting on April 26, 2001, in front of 350.
Public hearing on 3739. Mark, can you explain what we're looking at?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Representative Patridge, 2739.
Representative Lowe.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lowe, who is in Representative Patridge's spot. As for 3739, we have three amendments. Three sets. They should be in front of your packet. The dash ones. The dash ones authorize, rather than require PERS to provide this plan, and it allows any self-directed investment plan by board and council to be subject to the bill requirements. Twos replace the bill with the task force, the self-directed investment task force from House Bill 3734, I believe. And then the dash threes provide a unitization system for investments to provide for valuing and reporting changes of member accounts. And so that's what we're looking at today, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative King, would you speak into the sponge?
Thank you. You're
welcome.
Hello, Spence. This is Representative King, House District 44. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 3739. The bill allows PERS participants to have self-direction for their PERS retirement accounts investments, just as current prevalent practice exists in 401k plans in the private sector. In addition to the existing guaranteed and variable accounts, PERS participants could select from a wide range of pre-approved mutual funds to have their investments more accurately reflect their investment objectives and increase their investment diversification. The self-direction would be for the participants' funds only, not the employer's portion of the participants' investment benefits. Section 2 allows daily monitoring of the participants' investments and the dynamic ability for the participant to give investment direction instructions in their account utilizing a website on the Internet. This is a standard practice for millions of private sector retirement plan participants. The bill currently directs PERS to initiate self-direction. The dash one amendments modify this instruction to authorizes. Self-direction is a significant step and deserves analysis, understanding, and good planning to implement, and I urge the adoption of the dash one. I don't think that we're ready to say, thou shalt do this. I think we need to have a process to approach it reasonably. The dash two amendments create a task force to study the self-direction issue. I think this is not necessary, as the PERS board and their designees have the ability. I see two ability in there, so I guess my little editing didn't get out of that one. Have the ability to evaluate this issue without a task force. The dash threes direct PERS to unitize the guaranteed and variable accounts within PERS. This would allow for daily evaluation of participant accounts and also creates the ability to more efficiently value and administer PERS accounts. Utilizing self-direction and unitization of the PERS accounts not only dramatically improves the investment options and services for the participants, but also opens the door to utilizing already existing administrative services and software and brings participant investment services from the 1970s into this century. By not having to design an OPUS-type system and using the off-the-shelf existing administrative services, the state, PERS, and the participants could save as much as $100 million in administrative and software creation expenses. I don't think that that's in 1 year, but it's depending on the cost of creating a self, administering unique service, it might not take very many years before that kind of economy could potentially be realized. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Lowe?
Representative King, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's intriguing. Are you aware that our committee unscheduled a whole bunch of funds for the PERS RIM system and the computer update, and in fact some of the work that's been done on the PERS technology piece has led us to the understanding that they may not have the technological wherewithal to handle a daily investment monitoring scheme or to handle this radical change in how PERS operate. Have you given any thought to that?
I am. I served on the Interim Audit Committee where we addressed the OPUS issue, much as you have done, and I'm very familiar with the fact that we have done some backing off of the funding reexamination of that. To say that they can't do it would not be accurate, but to say that could their existing system do it, that would be true, and the system as they had been looking at doing, that would also be true. Another truism would be that if we look out in the future and say, 10 years or 50 years, whenever it is, and we did start allowing this kind of a service, but if we tried to use something that made the existing system work but did not incorporate the daily valuation and the self-direction, you would have to tear up probably the entire OPUS product and throw it away in order to bring this type of service in. This kind of administrative service exists very competitively in the private sector in large scale, certainly to handle entities as large as PERS, and it's off the shelf. That doesn't mean that it works perfectly for every need. There would be some unique aspects that PERS would need, but I would not be surprised that there would be substantial savings by using existing off-shelf private sector administrative services, and that the service would probably be better.
Representative Lowe? Yeah, but Representative King, that after we talked to them and ascertained that the direction in which they were going wasn't working, and they had consumed quite a bit of money, several million dollars, tens of millions of dollars, I was reminded of a conversation I had had with them in my office, where they said that their next step would be to ask the people of PERS, the PERS public employee participants, to pay from their interest earnings from their fund somewhere between $50 and $200 million for a whole new computer system, or to bring this online. So is what you're proposing also going to have to be paid for upgrades and so forth out of existing PERS, employees' money?
If I'm allowed the privilege of doing some wild ballpark guessing here, I think it would be true that no one in the private sector could come in and fix what I regard as a pretty broken administrative process. That really would require the kind of effort you just described. However, if we were to use the unitization and evaluation process and the self-direction process that's out there, I would not be surprised that a private sector vendor could manage this store for $25 million a year. Our current annual appropriation for this biennium, as I recall, is $42 million, to do the administrative service, and that the service is less than, what you can see today, in a 401k plan. It is also fair to say that, the 401k plan is a profit-sharing plan. It's a defined contribution plan. There are aspects of defined benefit and some aspects of defined contribution, you know, in the PERS system. So when we talk about 401ks, we are not talking apples and apples. There are some, you know, some differences there, but these are issues that can be resolved.
But you do agree that, I think your quote, I wrote it down, I'm not as good at taking this as Representative Walker, but at present you agree that the existing computer system can't handle it?
The systems, I don't think can handle the, you know, the existing load. I think something does need to be done at some point in time, and I think the circumstances getting worse, not better.
Yeah, it is getting worse, not better.
Well, it was designed back in an era when we didn't have the software capabilities we have today, and also we haven't upgraded the product itself. If we go back to 1970, most retirement plans had a benefit just like what you have here. Mm-hmm. You know, today, this is a product that almost everyone in the private sector has left.
Thanks.
That is not to say that the investment returns haven't been great. They do a great job of investing the money, you know, those things. But I think some of those issues mask some of the administrative problems we're addressing here.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Representative King. Randall? Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and with me is Dan Smith, who's the Director of Investments, and we're here to just give you a little bit of a flavor of how this bill might impact our operations and raise a few concerns. As Treasurer, just for the record, I'm also a member of the Oregon Investment Council, which is a 5-member board. 4 of the other members are appointed by the governor, and we are the investment group that manages and invests the money on behalf of the PERS system and another number of other funds. That portfolio is about $38 billion today. Has had a very long track record of doing high in performance and has done well for the beneficiaries in which this whole fund was set up and system was set up for.
Except last year.
Well, long term, we've done extremely well, Mr. Chair. And I think the fundamental question before you and this bill begins to pose is the defined benefit plan the appropriate plan for Oregon? Because, as you know, the PERS system is a defined benefit plan. The number of years in the system, you're guaranteed a certain retirement benefit based on the number of years. The PERS system is a complicated one. It does have some different bells and whistles, which other DB plans don't have. But for the long term, it served Oregonians well, and it served public employees very well. It's not only for state employees, but school districts, people in local communities, and governments have accessed this whole system. The question that this bill starts to pose is, should there be a choice within this defined benefit plan? To remind the chair and the committee, the state does have a defined contribution plan like a 401k for state and local governments. It's called a 457 plan. Again, the Oregon Investment Council is in fact in the process of restructuring that plan, but in essence it is a choice plan. The risks are borne by the employee who puts money in that. It's solely employee money, there's no employer money in that system, and it's a complementary effect to the PERS system. So I'm here to just say that this bill begins us down a discussion of whether we should open up this whole defined benefit plan to move it in another direction. And personally, I'm not sure that looking at the way the system is working so far and who we're serving with it, we're at a juncture financially with it. The fact is, the defined benefit plan has worked extremely well. You don't see a lot of turnover. I think one of the reasons why you've seen changes in the private sector for defined contribution, for lots of reasons, there's a lot of mobility, and there's an issue of mobility with the pension system. In this case, a defined benefit plan, I believe there's less mobility in the public sector. Teachers tend to stay as teachers for their career. They may go within different school districts, but they're still beneficiaries within this plan. So it's portable in the sense of stays within the structure and they have a reasonable retirement at the end of the day. The practical side of this, beyond the policy, is how would we manage a pension system and a pension fund with this overlay? And I think it starts to raise some questions that we're not, I'm not prepared to basically answer, because I'm not sure we have the answer today about how we would do this. But in essence, we have a finely tuned portfolio that looks at the long term to try to meet the benefits of current and future beneficiaries. It is finely tuned, diversified portfolio that has everything under the stars in it, stocks, bonds, real estate, venture capital. And the question would be, how would we manage that fund if, as is described in this bill, and it becomes an option, how if employees wanted to take their money and start self-directing? It raises some serious questions about how we, as a council, would manage this fund long-term. And at this point, we don't have any specifics to say other than I'm not sure, quite frankly, how we would move this forward if this would become law. So happy to answer any questions you might have. Just wanted to come in and just raise some issues, how we manage this money. Representative King, I talked to him a little bit about our concerns and how we may, how, if we can even address how we might solve those problems.
Thank you. Any questions?
No. Thanks. Good.
Thank you very much. Mary Plotkin, Tricia Smith, and Rich Peppers.
I guess the sponge is in front of me, so I'll start. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. We're here today to also raise some issues of concern regarding this bill. We represent folks who are members of the PERS system, and while we think they're every bit as intelligent and able to direct their investments as anybody else, we do think there are some advantages to pooling one's investments in the Oregon Investment Council and allowing what we consider to be trained professionals, but more importantly, trained insured professionals. We think it serves the state well. We think it serves our members well. If there is a general criticism of the PERS system, it would be that it has made too much money. And that would be the only criticism that I can think of that would even be valid, is that they've made too much money. And now we're trying to figure out what to do with it all. So, you know, I'm not sure that there's too many people out there with self-directed retirement plans that can say that 10 years later, at the end of a decade, they've made too much money. And so we would encourage you to, for now, reject this idea. And I think that the state treasurer did a nice job in kind of defining some of the issues around defined benefit plans and the problematic areas that would be, that would rise if folks started losing their money on a self-directed plan. So, thank you. Want to go next?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rich Peppers with the Service Employees International Union, Local 503, OPEU, and I too have concerns on behalf of our organization and the members we represent. I'll be brief because a lot of it has already been stated, but it boils down to two major concerns. One is we don't believe this is a time to be making or embarking on an additional new set of reorganization or changes, major changes within the PERS system. We're already looking at, within the context of this legislative session, some fairly major reorganizations in Senate Bill 134 having to do with pooling of local jurisdictions, possibly into a state pool, having to do with pooling of bonding, possibly all of this contingent on what passes and when. And as was mentioned before, there are some computer funding issues and reorganization issues also needing to be addressed, plus possibly some language within the within 134 that might call for reassessing actuarial assumptions in the fund. The second area of concerns is that we don't see an outcry for this kind of a change from our members. The primary folks for whom the fund is not our individual members, but members of the participants in the system in general, for this kind of a change. As has been mentioned before, there's a very high satisfaction with the performance of the investment fund to date. The defined benefit plan makes sense and has been performing well. We don't know that there's an outcry for changes to that. And the surveys of the plan participants show within the plan relatively high satisfaction rating too among the people who are the primary beneficiaries of the current plan. All of which argues, we believe, that there's no need for making this kind of a change, embarking on a new direction. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, or member of the committee, for the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA has currently about 19,000 members who work statewide in Oregon's K-12 system, as well as community college, Head Start, libraries, and other public districts. And I am here also to share our concerns with House Bill 3739 and its amendments with respect to Representative King. We feel that if we were going to change something about our compensation package, this would not be where we would make changes. Our members have in their compensation package primarily their wages, their health benefits, and their retirement plan. Their wages are stagnant, their health benefit costs are skyrocketing, and the one piece that they can look to with some comfort and satisfaction is their retirement account. It is the main thing that keeps us, that helps us retain good employees and recruit others. Because we have a healthy retirement system in PERS, we have the ability to bring people into schools who might not come otherwise. The hours are not good, the pay is not good, and there are lots of other reasons you might want to find a different job. The PERS plan is one of our recruitment tools, and we'd like you to allow it to remain healthy, and in our opinion, it's not broken, so please don't fix it for us. And with that, I agree with the other things that have been said, and I'm happy to answer questions if that's possible.
Any questions?
Thank you very much.
If anyone else would like to testify on House Bill 3739 that has not had an opportunity, and seeing we'll close the public hearing on 3739, and seeing if you could work with so we can return the address and the concerns, and we'll come back and reevaluate at that point. Let's open up a work session, House Bill 2768. Mark, you want to say something to anyone?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Representative Lowe, House Bill 2768 has two amendments that we'll be looking at today. The Dash 1 amendments replace the bill with language from Senate Bill 833. And then the Dash 2 amendments help further define telecommunications infrastructure. Add telecommunications infrastructure to the definition of infrastructure project and as part of the state's basic framework for continuing and expanding economic activity. The Dash 2 is also required that a local government governing body, when applying for financial assistance for telecommunications infrastructure projects, adopt a resolution after a public hearing that confirms the proposed project is necessary and appropriate, and would not otherwise be provided within reasonable time and for reasonable cost by a for-profit entity. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative King, welcome, Yvonne. I mean, I saw you last session, and it was a good opportunity to see you again. Do you want to say anything specific about the amendments and comments?
King. Thank you very much. Representative Al King, House District 44, Yvonne's really appreciative of her help, you know, on this issue.
House Bill 2768 points out the need to financially support telecommunications infrastructure in Oregon, express a desire to make funds available in the Special Public Works Fund, and enables the sale of state revenue bonds through the Oregon Bond Bank for eligible telecommunications infrastructure projects. In Section 3, telecommunication infrastructure is added to the basic framework of economic activity in ORS 285B.413. Section 4 amends ORS 285B.410C2 Special Public Works Fund Law to specifically name telecommunications as eligible, including properties, real or personal, structures or equipment constructed or configured for the electronic transmission or receipt of audiovisual and other electronically transferred information between different sites or facilities. Section 5 amends ORS 285B.428 to add D. For a telecommunications project, provide an adopted resolution for the governing body after a public hearing showing findings that the proposed is necessary and appropriate and would not otherwise be provided by a local for-profit business within a reasonable time and cost. House Bill 2768 seeks to extend the goals of last session's Senate Bill 622, which provided capital for building telecommunications infrastructure in Oregon, by providing a funding option for telecommunications infrastructure to rural communities. When the private sector is not prepared to add local telecommunications improvements, many rural communities cannot offer a high enough return on investment to attract private sector telecommunications capital. However, if they do not have telecommunications services, these communities deteriorate and their citizens miss important economic, social, and educational benefits. House Bill 2768 allows for local government to install telecommunications equipment, lease them back to the private sector, and use the lease revenue to repay the bonds. The private sector also gains as they generate revenues without having to capitalize equipment and gaining from business that otherwise was not there. I should also point out that in discussions with the Treasurer's Office, that it is the intent to be working with these bonds so that they would continue to be classified as non-taxable bonds. Bonds that are dedicated to a private purpose would be taxable. However, if it's for a public entity and then there's an RFP and there's a competitive process, then that would continue to be, you know, a tax-exempt program. If you needed more clarification, I think that the Treasurer's Office can help with that as well. And I ask Yvonne to step forward, you know, in case she has comments or in case you have questions for her as well.
What is the status of Senate Bill 833?
I couldn't hear.
What's the status of Senate Bill 833?
The status of that is kind of interesting. They want to adopt in exactly the language that we, you know, see before us here with these amendments, and then as you are on the bill with me, and Senator Nelson is the sponsor of the other bill, we would need to see, you know, which bills to carry forward and sponsorship, et cetera. But this is a cooperative effort.
Okay. Do you have any comments?
My name is Yvonne Addington. I'm manager of finance for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We worked with Representative King on this bill at his request, and we are glad to support the bill. We always believe that we could do telecommunications infrastructure. But at the time this bill, our program, the Special Public Works Program, was established in 1987, the words telecommunications were probably not as important as they are today. So it was classified by us as other infrastructure necessary for our community and business development. We think this amendment will bring the telecommunications infrastructure into equal ranking as the need for water, sewer, streets, and other economic development related needs. So therefore, the department does support the House Bill 2768-2 amendment.
Just as a way of clarification, by the amendments in here aren't going to place telecommunications projects, and they're not going to be able to
draw dollars out of the Special Public Works funds, the bonding dollars, the pure lottery bag. They'll have to use this source, which is the revenue funds. We're not putting them in the same category that you're doing for cities and doing,
right,
compete against sewer and water systems out of those same funds.
They will be as important as the water, sewer, and streets and all the other airports and docks.
But the changes we're making will not allow those to be drawn out of those funds that we've set up specifically for those classes of projects.
We don't have set-asides for any of these. We consider them all equally important.
Yeah.
And with our ability to use existing lottery proceeds to pay for grants or direct loans, that leverages our ability to sell Oregon Bond Bank revenue bonds. And so we have never had